there. Welcome to the Horrible Video Game Podcast from HorribleNight.com. I'm your host, Justin Lacey. This episode is for Wednesday, May 13th, 2015, and I'm joined today to check in with Cole Monroe on his video games.
We're talking about video games, not wrestling?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I got to make that clear.
Nah, all right, man.
Well, it was a short show.
Okay.
I trick him every time. We're going to talk about wrestling, and then the old bait and switch.
Old bait and switcher.
You actually wrote a piece recently kind of on your gaming habits and where you're at, but kind of wanted to just check in there before we got into the specific games. Is there anything you wanted to add kind of about, like, your little trying to find something to play?
No, I think, man, I'm still in the same place where I'm kind of just waiting for The Witcher 3 to come out.
That's fair.
And it's not, I don't think that's a bad place to live in, because I know that it's going to be another huge game. And
you don't want to false start with any other games?
I don't want to false start with any other games, and I don't want to, you know, take the time away from doing other things that The Witcher 3 is going to take away. You know,
yeah.
Like, I want to play that, and I've had, you know, basically about a month from finishing Dragon Age Inquisition to when Witcher 3 comes out. So I think that's a good break.
Do you think you'll be ready?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready now. Like, I want to play The Witcher 3 so bad. But I don't really want to get into anything else.
Yeah, that's fair. No, but I like your, I'd been kind of saying that and bouncing between games, but the fact that, yeah, there's also, if you know you're about to do another deep dive into a big game and there's other things in your life you kind of want to do in the meantime that you know you're going to kind of give up to play that game, that's important too.
Yeah.
Not just video games.
Sure.
It's not about video game sacrifices.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've actually been, the last 2 weeks, I've been playing a bit more. I took a couple weeks off. Things were kind of light. But one of the things I've been doing is just finding room for console gaming. I've been playing my PlayStation 4 quite a bit more. Bloodborne helps out with that. But, like, I brought it back out to the living room versus being holed up in my office, which I've definitely noticed a difference between playing kind of an open area versus kind of my confined cave, if you would. Like, I almost come back to play in my office on my PC to just do recordings and do content for Horrible Night rather than deep dives into games. And kind of with our resurgence of our Game Curious videos, that's kind of helped out with that. It's just like I just kind of go in, do my thing, and then come back out and play whatever I want to play. I haven't been able to play, like, I've been meaning to play The Witcher 2, which I have on PC, but I haven't been able to do any deep dives on my PC for whatever reason.
Yeah, I fired that up, like, occasionally. I fired it up, like, 2 weeks ago after I finished Dragon Age just to, you know, get a taste of what The Witcher 3 is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
We had talked offline about, like, graphical, you bought a new graphics card, and I was thinking about how mine would perform with The Witcher 3 and if I needed to upgrade. And then mm-hmm. I just keep going back to Witcher 2, and I'm just like, how does this game that's 4 years old look better than a lot of the games that are being released right now? Like,
it's silly.
It's mind-blowing how good CD Projekt Red is at graphical capabilities on whatever game.
I don't even know what they target. I mean, I'm sure the consoles being bigger players now than, like, when Witcher 1 was around, like,
sure,
they can use that as a baseline to make sure it's running at that level, but they're high end. They just go for it. And if you've got the machine that can handle it, it's worth it. it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's the debate I've been having with myself a little bit, not a lot, you know, 'cause I played Dragon Age on Xbox One, and I just fell in love with the controller and the system while I was playing that game, and have had a hard time going back to the PS4 for whatever reason, just controller wise. Like, it's weird. Like, I can't explain it really, but knowing that I can use Xbox One controller on the PC is pretty much like setting my sights on Witcher 3.
You were a pretty big fan of PS4 controller originally, right?
Yeah, I was. And then, for the Xbox One, I thought the sticks were too high, and it was just weird, but it was, but now going back and forth, I like the looseness and the height of the sticks, and the PS4 sticks seem a little stiffer to me. I don't know. It's
hey, it's good to have different opinions on the website, even if you're wrong. we were all in the PS4 camp, but I got nothing against the Xbox One. I'm probably more likely to use that on my PC the way the drivers are going to be headed. So
I definitely like it better than the 360 controller. It just feels better in my hands.
360 controller just feels more and more like a toy. Like
it really does.
Yeah, it's just you can tell like the advances they're making in the like more quality pieces that they're putting into the controllers now. But
yeah,
I don't really know like where your PC is as far as I think it's back in one of your rooms or it's a separate office or whatever. But do you like to change up the environment that you play in? Like I was having a conversation with Josh about like he's been so focused on his PS4 because he bought a new recliner. And it's just like, this is just my gaming chair. This is where I want to be. But he was like, you know, kind of the one that got us all back into PC stuff. And like, I'm totally in that mode of I just want to veg out on the couch for when I'm playing long game sessions versus sitting upright at the desk.
Yeah. And I have a really comfortable recliner in my living room as well. But for me, like I discovered when I got my Xbox One and started playing Dragon Age, like I was going to leave my Xbox One in the living room because that's where the space is. And I got the Kinect for my wife mainly. And I started playing Dragon Age and I couldn't. This text was too small on my screen and I couldn't read it. So I was like, well, I'm going to take this to the office. Sorry. Nice. And it stayed up there ever since. I had everything up there except for my Wii U until recently when I brought my PS4 back down. But I don't know. There's just something about the closeness that I'm sitting to my screen in my office area that I really have started to prefer over sitting in a more comfortable chair far away from the TV.
That's exactly where I was when I got my new kind of TV monitor in my office. It's like, cause it definitely allows me to get more absorbed in things. And I definitely felt it because what I've been experimenting with is taking my PC out to my living room. And I got it all set up and I started playing Witcher 2 out there and I had that text problem of like, like a lot farther away. I mean, if you look at it from where I sit with my monitor in my office, the screen is bigger to me here than when I'm sitting in the living room far away from the TV.
Yeah, that's the same. I have a TV monitor as well.
So
that's the same.
The solution is I need a giant 4K television.
Of course.
And
of course.
Yeah, so that'll be the next big thing. But no, it's just been interesting how like I just noticed I was playing shorter when I was focused on the playing in the office, but if I took it out the living room, I was able to get back to having 2 or 3 hour game sessions, which I really hadn't done in the last couple months. And Bloodborne's been kind of the beneficiary of that. So I'll be curious to see where I play Witcher 3 because I'm playing that no matter what. So and I'll be on my PC and we'll see what I do there, but. Let's get into your games. Got a couple here to talk about today, and one game we haven't talked about, criminally haven't talked about enough on this site, is Axiom Verge, and you've actually finished the game. I'm about, I'm going to say 85% of the way through it as far as story-wise, items-wise, that's a whole different conversation, but I know you like Axiom Verge, but that's the extent of my knowledge, so tell me about Axiom Verge.
So Axiom Verge, you know, fits right into my wheelhouse in terms of games that I like. In my article that I wrote this week, it was basically talking about this and Dragon Age, where I like RPGs and I like Metroidvania-style games, adventure games, backtracking games.
I think I'm calling them action-adventure platformers.
That works for me.
Okay.
Action-adventure platformer games. What I really like about Axiom Verge is, can I just say everything?
It's fine.
Actually, there is one big glaring fault with it that I have is the lack of teleportation.
Yeah, yeah.
Between save points, or just like in Castlevania Symphony of the Night, if there was just teleportation areas in the different levels, I would be fine.
We had that debate. Oh, we're trying to remember, like, when did Castlevania add the teleport? And it's not in Symphony of the Night, Axiom Verge definitely, you know, is going old school. Like, his he is definitely inspired by old school Metroids that don't have that, and it's kind of one of those things of he made some concessions, and I say he, one man did this game, like music, art, everything. So incredible. Thomas Happ is
incredible,
a freak in the best way possible. And that came out weird, and I wanted, but we'll go with it. He had to make constantly making decisions as far as what is he modernizing, because he brought in some cool like modern gameplay features that like the weapon wheel I really liked.
Yep.
But it was still making some old school decisions, and I think that was the only knock I had against it. And the reason I haven't finished it is just because I'm in backtracking mode of go back to old areas and figure out what my new stuff can unlock.
Yeah.
But man, everything just it's a 20-minute commitment just to get back and forth between places right now.
Yeah, and that was my biggest issue too. Like, I put 16 hours into the game. I've got like 92% of the map, 85% of the weapons, or maybe 95, 82, whatever. The weapons and items. But the weapons I did, like, so I went through, got to the end game basically, and then said, okay, I don't want to spend a lot of time hunting for these items. I'm going to like just look at a map with all the items online posted and go get them. And then I did that for maybe an hour or two, obviously haven't gotten everything. It's like, all right, fuck this, I'm done. You know, I just got to the point where it's like, I was just spending too much time backtracking, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to go finish the game. But there are certain weapons that I needed to be able to do that successfully as well. The flamethrower specifically is...
I haven't got a flamethrower yet. Nice.
The shit.
All right.
and then, like, you know, try to get as much life as you can, too. And then you can kind of spam the final boss a little bit. But, yeah, like, the storyline, you know, whatever. That's not the focus of these games, these action-adventure platformers.
I thought the story
but it served it well, you know. It didn't get in the way, but it wasn't like something where it wasn't the reason to play this game. You know, the reason to play this game is the actual gameplay.
I found it easier to follow than some Metroid, like the half Metroid stories. So, like, they did a better job there. The one thing I didn't like about it was you're a scientist, and so I don't get why he's like really good with a gun and can jump around and all that stuff, but that doesn't matter.
it doesn't.
But I like the kind of, like, you know, I was expecting the sci-fi Metroid stuff, but there's a little bit of cyberpunk to this too that I didn't expect and was really interesting, especially because of how it plays into, like, I think it's kind of standout. It's not really a feature, but like it's focused on glitches.
Yes.
And how that affects gameplay and also ties into the story and is really awesome. Like, especially from the, like, that's where he kind of breaks away from that. I feel like this is another 12-bit game. Like, it's in between 8-bit and 16-bit, like, graphics-wise. But, like, there was, like, just the way the hack gun works, which is, like, could be one of my favorite tools of the year, for sure, that you can hack the environment to find new areas or hack enemies to give them different properties, and, like, all of a sudden, instead of shooting you, they're leaving health. Like,
yeah, exactly. And also that gun, the hack gun, what does it sound like to you?
Okay, I don't know. I hear...
I will tell you, and then you'll go back and be like, holy shit.
Yeah, I hear like a little crystal-y thing. I never really thought about it.
It is Doc talking in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. It's like the text scrolls in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, I gotcha.
Next time you play it, you'll be like, holy shit, totally is.
That's awesome. I think that thing was the surprising thing, and also the fact that the hack gun levels up. Like, that's where... again, they use that Metroid baseline, and then they do unexpected things with it. Because, like I said, he's not the most agile character, but when I play these games, I start to look at, I'm going to be able to get there later when I get the double jump. It's like, well, he doesn't really get a double jump. He gets something that accomplishes it, but it's not what you expect. And that
gets upgraded throughout the game as well. Yep. There's like 3 or 4 different upgrades for that thing too, and I think that's pretty cool.
So he was I like, and we may be the target audience for it too, because I'm curious how that comes across to new players. But because he kind of toys with us in that he knows what we know about these types of games, and while everything feels familiar, everything feels new, and that's kind of the amazing hook of Axiom Verge for me.
Yeah, and the difficulty level too. It wasn't something that you could just blaze through super easy. And the I did kind of like the I don't know a better term for this, but like the Blaster Master aspects of the game. You're not in a vehicle, but you're like, you know, you shoot your little drone out and then
yeah.
you can go explore and stuff.
The drone's awesome.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that part because you can get to different places and you can use that as kind of a double jump as well.
I started doing dumb shit where I would just find as, you know, I'd find as far off to the side as I could go, and I would jump off and then shoot the drone up at an angle and just hope that he gets to something else, and it paid off a couple times. And
yeah, absolutely.
I was like, am I supposed to be here? Am I going to break the game? And then the game starts glitching and you're like, is that part of the game? Because this is it's blowing my mind.
I was doing some pretty crazy stuff with that as well. And then doing stuff that I didn't think was part of the game necessarily, or like necessary to finish the game. And then you come to another point and you're like, oh, the shit I was doing back there just for fun, I need to do to advance.
Yeah.
You
know? Like, yeah.
Wow. That's freaking cool. And it doesn't explain, you know, it doesn't explain it. It's just like, it kind of just lets you play in the environment and figure these things out on your own.
I had a couple moments like that where I thought I was pushing the boundaries and like getting to places I wasn't supposed to be. Cause that's what I always want to try to do. Like I try to, for better or worse, to try to break the game, but just like, let's see how far I can get with what I have. And then I find myself in an area where I get the next item that was actually required for where I started to get to the next area. It's like I thought I wasn't supposed to be here and I'm supposed to be here. So are you just a fucking genius with how you're laying out your levels? Because I feel like an absolute power with this game, but you're totally controlling me. You're totally like, I feel like more of a puppet now than I realized.
Did you ever find places where you're just like, I don't know, like I'm stuck. There's nothing I can do here. This is fucking bullshit. And then, you know, you kind of have the same, for me, it was like kind of the same realization of when we played Portal in Portal 2. It's like, no, I have a fucking portal gun. Like, I'm not stuck. I can do other things than I realized. And, you know, it's just like, okay, what do I need to use the grappling hook? Do I need to use the drone? Like, what can I do here to get past this? And then when you figure it out, you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, I spent so much time staring at this.
Those aren't going to be the same for every person because, it's just like, you hadn't been using whatever upgrade in that way yet, and other people could discover it whenever. And yeah, totally. I think I had two standout moments. I never hit a heavy wall. I'm kind of at a wall now, just because, like I said, I'm 85% of the way through, and I took a break, so I don't really remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But I think I'll have some night where I was like, hey, I've got 2 to 3 hours. Let's just explore the whole map again, and I'll accidentally figure this out. And I like being in that world and playing around with the hack gun, and the music's awesome.
The music is incredible.
And I don't know. Like, did you have any expectations into this game? Because this was the like standout Kickstarter or like indie developed Metroidvania on the horizon. Like, I was like, this is the one that's going to kick ass, and it still manages to kind of surpass my expectations.
No, I didn't really have any expectations. I remember hearing about it when it first launched Kickstarter, and I was like, okay, that's going to be a game that I'm interested in. But it really crept up on me in terms of its release date, and yeah, all of a sudden everybody's talking about, hey, you should play Axiom Verge, it's on PSN. And I was like, yep, okay. I don't know what this is, because I didn't like read into it or anything. I was like, it looks like a Metroidvania type of game. I'm into that. I didn't know about the weapons. I didn't know about like anything. And then I'm into this and I'm just like, whoa, whoa, this is crazy. And, you know, familiar but new at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I'm curious to see how it.
And one guy.
Yeah. That's that can't be healthy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it was kind of one of those things too, where I booted it up and I was like, okay, one guy did this. This game looks and feels amazing. Why is the music awesome? Wait, he did the music too? Like, it was just like, I don't know. I always think like you're going to find the one thing that, you know, that he wasn't the one developer. He wasn't really good at this particular thing. And I don't know what that standout thing is, because I mean, our gripe is teleportation, and I feel like that's a design decision. Like he made that decision, like he consciously made that decision. And
yep, so that's just our personal taste at that point. You know, it's not a right decision. It's not a wrong decision. It's just something that would have made my life easier as an adult gamer. You know, that's it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. Like if I'm 10 or 12 years old, I'm playing this like I was playing Super Metroid, I wouldn't give a shit. Like, this is
right.
Like, let's just go back. We're hanging out.
Oh, you mean I got to play this game longer?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. You know? That's a good point. anything else to say about Axiom Verge before we move on?
Everybody needs to play it, I think, even if you're turned off by the graphics or for whatever reason, just get over that shit. It's great. It's so tightly controlled. It's the weapons, the variety of the weapons. You know, some weapons are for me just garbage. Like they don't do anything for me. But that's what you're going to get.
Cool.
That's the game. That's what you're going to get in a game that has 15 to 20 weapons.
So before the flamethrower, what were you using? What was your?
Honestly, I used the original gun a lot.
Okay. I was mainly running around with that shotgun thing, which was interesting because like it doesn't have any range, but it was taking care of what I needed to be taken care of, which was the thing that was about.
Is that the lightning one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like you just kind of.
Yeah, I use that. Yeah, I use that in certain situations, like depending on what enemies I'm facing, I'll use that, and then the one that shoots like the bolts out too, that kind of like crisscross and go different ways.
Oh, the ones that bounce off the walls. Yeah.
Yeah, I use that a little bit.
I was like super stoked when I got the spread gun, for lack of a better term, and then I rarely use the spread gun.
Yeah, and like you said, the upgradable weapons with the distance, you get distance upgrades. So like if your weapon is a shorter throw on it or whatever, it could shoot further.
Yeah, so it doesn't have like,
I thought that was cool.
Like the collectibles in the game, you've got your health collectibles, but it doesn't have like a missile equivalent in Metroid. Yep. That was always the thing of like the reward for finding some crevice you were barely supposed to be in. And this one kind of replaces it with weapon upgrades that are either a power upgrade or a distance upgrade, which is kind of cool because you start to kind of, it's subtle, but it's just, it's a nice little touch that they're adding on to everything. So, so Axiom Verge is also, coming to PC here pretty soon. So if you don't have a PlayStation 4, which is, I think it's on PS4 and Vita right now, it'll be making its way to other platforms soon. I would not be shocked to see it jump to Xbox One in the next year.
Isn't it out on Steam now? Like, I think it
I don't
came
think so.
Out. I don't know.
They had the announcement. I want to say May 14th.
Next week, so day after this releases.
So yeah, go get it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then Aaron's actually going to be, he'll do at least a Game Curious video on that, if not bigger. So we were kind of trading off Metroidvanias there. But
nice.
And then you finished Dragon Age Inquisition.
Well, storyline finished.
Okay.
Let's be specific. I did not Gifford finish it.
What are your kind of final thoughts now? We had a Dragon Age Inquisition conversation the last couple months, but now that you're kind of through the bulk of it, what do you think? What stands out? Where does it rank in the annals of RPG history with Cole Monroe?
I mean, it's up there for sure. I don't know if it's one of the games that I'll go back to years from now. Just because I don't necessarily think that 3D RPGs have the staying power that the 16-bit do. Plus, I was playing those in a different time of my life, and so I have a different.
Do you still go back to the 16-bit ones?
Yeah, I'll probably every once in a while I'll play for a couple hours. Yeah, like I'll play Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger once a year at least.
All right.
But I mean, man, it just everything, like the whole world. And I mentioned this in our podcast before. It's like I played this game differently than I'd played other like open world type RPGs where you're making decisions based on your character, not where you're just playing a character like in a Final Fantasy game or whatever. And I played it differently than I ever played a game before. And I think that made a huge difference for me not stopping after 10 or so mm-hmm. hours like I have in the past. And I, you know, I never had played a Dragon Age game really before this and didn't know what to expect. And was basically, when it came out, I was like, man, that's not the game for me. That's not the game for me. And then I just like, well, it's $35. I will buy it when I bought it.
Yeah.
And realize, hey, this is kind of like Mass Effect and I should probably give it a chance cause I really like Mass Effect. But it was the whole like world building aspect, the history that was behind the world that really grabbed me. The storyline was fine. It wasn't something that was, you know, the best ever and really grabbing me. But that could be because I took such large breaks in going sure. through the storyline to do all the side quests. And stuff.
That's a good point. You weren't really in the flow with the main beats.
Yeah. And then there was probably a lot of things I could have done differently and spent more time in the game figuring out like each probably, individual character's story and all that stuff. But
there's probably so many people that have so many ridiculous opinions about the right way to play that game. Like as far as like if you want to enjoy the story, you should do this, and this and do these side quests, but not these side quests. And because like that big thing that came out at the beginning was like, get out of the hinterlands. Like, do not spend all of your time initially there and overlevel because the game's going to be boring for you after that. And BioWare, like, they want to give you this open world, but they also kind of need to nudge you in certain directions sometimes. And those lines are hard to draw, but, like, as far as then taking that to the level of how do you enjoy the story with all this other content, like, that's a beast to kind of... how do you let it be open, but still like kind of enforce your narrative is interesting, an interesting challenge.
And for me, like I did stay in the Hinterlands, probably too long, but I also went to all these other levels and like finished everything in the world, in the level before I left or as much as I could. And before I got bored and I was over leveled, but that, what didn't make the game boring for me, that made the game like more accessible. And usually like if I can't get past an area because I'm underleveled, that's when I tend to give up on the game.
That's
because I get frustrated and I keep dying or something. And this one, it was like, nah, man, like I'm just blazing through and I appreciated it.
And think about that. Then they're also making this game for like a wide audience like that. They kind of got to let you go and not throw up those walls for you. Cause this isn't trying to be, you know, your Dark Souls. So
And the final boss fight like wasn't that big a deal, and maybe if I was appropriately leveled for that, it would have been a bigger challenge and more of a satisfying fight for me. But it was like I'm cool, like I didn't even come close to that.
I mean, you still got what you wanted out of it too, so.
Absolutely. And I told you or I texted you right after I beat it, and so you finish the fight and then you kind of go back to your castle to recap with all your pals. And I was heading into my quarters and for like the end game, and the game crashed. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, this is the first time it had ever crashed on me in this moment. And luckily, it had autosaved like literally 10 seconds before, so I just loaded it back up and then was fine. And then I just watched the ending. But it was like, oh my god, what are you doing? Why?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, but it's great. Like I know you probably won't necessarily go back and ever finish it, but I recommend going back into just to play certain areas for sure.
It's funny. I picked that game out when it came out. And saw that this was going to be a problem, because it was like it was end of the year and there were two other games that I needed to spend significant time with, that I wanted to spend a significant time with for our game of the year conversations.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but I love Dragon Age Inquisition. It was like the game I wasn't counting on having to play, and I got like 30 or 40 hours into it, and I'm like, I have to, like, this sucks. I have to take a break, and I also know I won't come back to it because I'm taking a break.
Yeah.
And I had to move on to other things. And so it's been really fun to see you and Gifford kind of really get into the game, to kind of know I wasn't crazy that it and I think Aaron played quite a bit of it too, but it was just like kind of feel validated and like, no, that game's special. Like that game is a huge step forward for that franchise, and good on BioWare for kind of getting back on track there. But I hope I go back to it, but man, like it's just like
it's
I will also be in a different world by the end of Witcher 3, so but I'll be curious to see if it I don't think it'll scratch the same itches, so there might be room for both. But
yeah, and I think there's some, you know, there's some mechanics that Dragon Age borrowed from The Witcher 2 that I'll see if it's in Witcher 3, you know, like the where you press the medallion in Witcher 2, or you press the control stick in Dragon Age to find the things that you can pick up. Like if I'm tired of that from Dragon Age, that might affect my opinion on Witcher 3. If there's like a
don't play Dying Light because that has it too.
Okay. If that has a heavy
that's just I think it's just
collectible
the two,
thing.
Yeah. I think that's just the 2014-2015 gameplay gimmick.
Like, but yeah, and at the same time I'm not hating on it because I would rather have that discover things I can pick up rather than me just going to all these corners to pick up
so
shit.
I'm okay with this battle for the top between Dragon Age, Elder Scrolls, and Witcher, as long as they just keep like climbing on top of each other. Like it's just this endless like flood of one-upsmanship, because I think the ground's set for they're all kind of doing different things, and so I'll be really curious to see one, how Witcher turns out, and then what BioWare and Bethesda's kind of response is to both of these games, because Dragon Age took a lot from Skyrim as well, like and I think kind of refined it in some smart ways, but also the focus on your group over the individual stuff is will kind of be its differentiating factor. So cool. I hope I go back to this. Let's hope for my sake.
Just go back to it and just put Iron Bull in your party. Just and just enjoy it.
But I don't need him.
But he's the best.
Yeah.
He is the best.
All right, I think we're gonna move on here. We'll circle back to your other games on a future show. But like you said, you're waiting for Witcher, so I thought I might try to find some games to fill the time for you in between now and the release. Granted, it's only a week or two away, which is awesome. But
or if we live in United Arab Emirates, we could have The Witcher 3 now.
Oh wow!
Apparently, it got released early there
okay.
for some reason.
But since we don't, maybe you should, in the Metroidvania world, our action-adventure platformer world.
Yeah, we're taking it back.
Did you ever play Guacamelee?
I never did play Guacamelee, and I'm not sure why. I think it was just one of those games that came and went, both this one and probably the next one you're going to mention, just kind of came, and I wasn't in the mood for it at the time, and then it kind of just...
I feel like
lost it, you know.
Well, I mean the Metroidvanias might be more of a time sink than you want, but the Guacamelee's like personality is so light and has so many goddamn references to retro games and pop culture that you will be laughing the entire time you're playing it.
Okay.
That would be kind of my push for this genre, but also I got to give a nod to Ori and the Blind Forest because it's kind of got a magical tone to it. So it's a little bit more subdued than Guacamelee. So you've kind of got a couple flavors to go with, but both are definitely worth playing. And Guacamelee just came out. I think it's a PlayStation Plus game of the month on PlayStation 4. So.
Oh, for this for me?
Yes.
Okay, so, well then I'm just going to go download it after this.
There you go. That would help.
And I think for Ori, the reason why I kind of stayed away from it was I just finished. Oh man.
Just finished Axiom Verge.
No, it was before that.
Oh, yeah.
What's the game called? Dust on Elysian Chill. So
oh, yes. Yeah.
It was like, it was kind of in the same vein.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I was just like, I'm going to take a break from this type of.
Yeah, I think you should hang out with the Luchador.
Okay.
Right. If you do want games that you can play in shorter bursts, I put up a game Curious of Ziggurat. Apparently you watched that. So you're kind of.
I did.
What do you think about Ziggurat?
At first I was like, I thought it might be too repetitive. Mm-hmm. When I first started watching it, but then like the different enemies came in, the different level types came in, the different weapons mm-hmm. that you were using. And it just, I just thought it was an interesting take on a, first person shooter type game, as well as an interesting take on the
dungeon crawler
and
roguelike.
Yeah, thank you, my brain isn't working. I thought it was a nice combination of all those three things to make it unique.
Yeah, and I didn't know how much of a roguelike player you are, so that was kind of more of like, because there's been a lot of good ones, but I've never really seen you talk about them as far as you get in, you play one round, you do one run, and you can do another one if you want to, but it's a good 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. I don't play a whole lot of roguelikes. I played a little bit of The Binding of Isaac on PS4. Mm-hmm. Don't really like that at all. And then Spelunky, I enjoy, but not to the level of one Aaron. Yep. But the combination of the three things for Ziggurat, I thought was appealing to me. Specifically,
I think it's on consoles now too. So I would definitely recommend it. It's a lot of it's just fun. It's the most fun, fast paced roguelike I've played in a long time.
Yes,
so.
That's the thing that I like too. It was like you were running around real quick, and it didn't take you long to get from area to area. And the style of it too, I enjoyed.
Oh, well. Yeah, it's style, yeah. I don't know where the fuck that game came from.
Yeah, how much is it?
Just another 10, 15 bucks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in that cool. in that realm. So, cool. I would also say on the short gameplay sessions, this game can be frustrating, but you can also play it like really quickly. Is Titan Souls?
I don't even know what Titan Souls is.
Okay, so Titan Souls, I believe, came out of a Game Jam, but it's top down pixel art action game where kind of Shadow of the Colossus is the best comparison you can make, in that you have an overworld and you go to the corners of the overworld and you find a boss. Your character, all you have is a single bow and arrow. You have a single arrow that you have to find the boss's weak point, and most of these bosses are one hit kills if you can pull it off. And
what?
You die a ton trying to figure out how to solve the boss, but you know, once you solve them, you've killed them in one hit, and you move on to the next guy, and that's all the game is. I don't know how many. I'm guessing there's probably 12 to 16 to 20 bosses in this game, but it kind of like almost looks like kind of reminds me of Zelda 2 a little bit from the adventure style. Like if you take a Zelda combined with Shadows of Colossus, and like your character, you have a roll move and. You can run after you roll, and that's basically your only evade tactics. And then you shoot your bow and arrow, and then you hold the button to try to pull the arrow back to you, or you have to go pick it up and then roll around. And
is that the only like weapon you have? Just
yes.
one arrow?
Yes.
Okay.
And like you'll do stuff like shoot the arrow through some flames to melt some ice and that kind of stuff. Like there are just little
more puzzly elements.
And yeah, the bosses totally feel like puzzles, and so that's out on consoles. At least I think it's out on PlayStation and PC right now. So
okay,
now definitely stand up your alley. So that's I think cool. We got some winners there. I think
yeah, definitely.
So maybe that'll tide you over to Witcher, and let's keep moving on to some newsworthy stuff. Going around the industry here, you and I, I wouldn't say it's unique to you and I, but we were pretty close to Konami growing up. There's obviously everybody has a couple franchises in particular with Konami that you're close to, and Konami's been heading in a new direction for a while, but just kind of made it more official lately. And they kind of suck for fans of their games. It kind of sucks to see how they're handling it. And the first big thing was just the weirdness around Kojima being let go or whatever's going on there, that he's basically contracted through the end of MGS5. And beyond that, Konami's going to keep Metal Gear Solid, but Kojima's going to move on.
And they've like taken his name off the website and the game. Like, it's not a Kojima. Hideo Kojima game or anything, or production or however it's listed. And like, he was removed from like the executive list or board of directors or something. And like, there's been no news regarding why that has happened. It's just kind of led to all this speculation and concern for the gaming industry of what he's actually going to be doing. And you know, this comes along with Konami dropping other people leaving Konami. What's his name?
Igarashi.
Yeah, Igarashi, the Castlevania guy.
Yeah, he had left a while back, a
couple years ago. I don't know what they're going to do, if ever again, with the Contra series.
Contra's. What else is in there? Contra, Castlevania, Metal Gear Solid, Silent Hill was the other shoe to drop with.
Yeah, because with Kojima's, you know, unknown, and then Del Toro left.
Del Toro basically was like, no, it's not happening.
Nope. And they said, like, that's not the end for Silent Hill as a franchise.
Just
that game is canceled. And it's like, well, that's the game everybody wanted, probably.
But I look at this like, yeah, it's not the end for the franchise, because you're just holding on to these franchises, and what are you going to do with them? Like, all the directors that we know are gone, and, you know, I'm sure you have game developers there, but, like, the fact that game development is just not going to be a focus for Konami going forward, and they're just going to have their licenses, and maybe other developers can come in and work on them will be the best case scenario, but, like, it's also just like, Konami doesn't have to care. Like, they've got slot machines to make, and you know, they make their money elsewhere these days. And gaming's weird in Japan right now, as far as like any of these big companies. Because, you know, I wonder, like, you know, how far away is Capcom from doing this as well? They don't have the alternatives that Konami has, is the thing. But it's a weird state for like those classic Japanese companies.
Yep. Yeah, and I think like, you had mentioned before we were started that like a lot of it's going in the mobile direction with Igarashi's making mobile games. Mm-hmm. Even like some of the old Square guys that were, you know, big when the 16-bit era of Final Fantasy was happening. Like, a lot of those have transitioned to mobile games.
Yep.
Because that's the trend in Japan. Everybody's playing games on their phones. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if... And maybe it's already come and gone. You know, their time has already come and gone, and we're just holding on to it for nostalgia purposes. I mean, obviously, Metal Gear Solid 5 is coming out, but Capcom hasn't done anything lately that's, you know, worthy of anything. And, you know, Konami is just...
Well, Monster Hunter. Capcom.
Oh, shit. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're right. It's not my taste. But again, that's, you know, there's probably a transition. Well,
yeah, we don't know what they're doing with their other franchises. And
Right. The franchises that we're into, well, and I guess Resident Evil is still around. So maybe Capcom is doing something.
So Resident Evil isn't what? Yeah. Like, yeah, right. They're in a weird spot, too. They're not as far down the rabbit hole as Konami has been. And then I don't know, like... My problem has been that Konami has a bunch of good franchises that we care about, and the futures are now uncertain. And you don't get the sense that they give a shit about their gaming fans, especially like when this week the thing was that PT was removed from the PlayStation Store, and you can't re-download it. It was just like, you didn't have to go, like, why are you making this awkward? Like, I get...
Yeah, how much money does that cost them?
Right.
Probably nothing, right? They probably, you know, like, is it maybe bandwidth, but are there a ton of people downloading it? Does it cost you anything to keep it in the store? Like, what's that hurt?
And that was a weird part, yeah. I didn't see the negative side to it, but...
Well, maybe because it has the reason why is because they canceled Silent Hills and it has that trailer at the end, you know, of the teaser, and maybe that's the reasoning behind them wanting to remove it. But
did you see my solution on Twitter?
No, I did not.
When the MGS 5 comes out, it comes out with a demo for PT.
There you go.
So
that works. Yeah, and like, or just cut that part out of it, and
yeah. Keep it's on just there. So many. Yeah. So many better ways that you can handle that for your fans, and they're just, like I said, they're just dropping the ball as far as fan service goes, and
yeah.
You know, that's just not how they do business, and that's the reality of it. But it's they're frustrating right now. So hopefully those franchises land in a good place, but who the hell knows? Interesting news. Oculus Rift finally got a release date. It'll be out in the first quarter of 2016. I believe as the, so they won't be the first one to market, because Steam or Valve is still saying their headset will be out at the end of the year this year. Morpheus is even weirder. But virtual reality is coming. That's really all we need. Like, we've got some dates to look forward to. Now we need to see some games. Like,
yeah, that makes sense. Like, is it just going to be another Kinect situation where there's all this hype and
need some killer apps? I mean, I think
you need some killer apps. Yeah, like, there's only so many, like, swimming with ocean animals
and roller coasters.
Yeah, that you can. Or what was that one that I think Jordan was telling us about it?
Like, where you had your hands on the keyboard.
Yeah, and then like shit would start.
Yeah, trying to get you to move your hands.
Spiders and stuff. Yeah, I think that's cool, but you can't play that for very long.
But at the same time, like, gaming isn't the only the only game in town for virtual reality too. So it'll have its other. But just getting it out there, that's exciting.
I just hope it's not something where it's like, hey, we need to differentiate from what's in the past, and we need, you know, this is a way to make more money, and it turns into 3D TVs, you know, which is where it's like it just dies a really quick death. It doesn't seem like it's headed that way, because, you know, there's a lot of people talking about the Oculus Rift, and a lot of people have used it and have enjoyed it, and Morpheus as well. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Yeah,
are you getting one day one?
I don't know. Like, I need the killer app, especially with, I think, with Valve showing up on the scene. I want to, I'm looking between those two. But if Sony surprises us, like, and I was reading this this take on it, that they're kind of in the best position, because Valve and Oculus require that you have a pretty decent computer, which I happen to have, so it's not a hurdle for me. But most people would have to upgrade their computer or have something else to run it on, versus the install base that the PlayStation 4 has, and I can just go buy the headset and I'm good to go. I probably will not buy the, I don't know, it depends how the Steam one looks at the end of the year, but I don't see myself buying one this year, because I want to see how all three pan out before I make my pick early next year. So I definitely want one.
Yeah, for me, it's, I need to get it on my head before I even make a decision, you know, because it's, you know, what if it gives me a headache? What if it's just, I just can't do it physically, you know, and that seems like, I don't know. That seems like a barrier of entry for these things as well. With, you know, it's one thing to buy a console sight unseen, you kind of know what you're getting, with, you know, what the controller feels like, what the games could potentially be. But this new thing, you know, is it just going to be Virtual Boy, where it's like, this sucks? Like, my head, I can't, my eyes are hurt, my head hurts, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. All the problems. We don't want another Virtual Boy. We don't want another Virtual Boy or Kinect or 3D TVs. We want this to
succeed. Or even motion controls, really. You know?
Like, we don't want it to be a fad. We want it to like really blow up something new. So as far as just some other random entertaining things going on, I got a kick out of this Guild Wars 2 story. I know you don't give a shit about Guild Wars 2, and that's fine. But when a community kind of like takes some vigilante justice into its own hands in game, especially with MMOs where you have that ongoing world, it's kind of interesting because basically they found this, they found a cheater, reported him, filmed him cheating like all the time, and ArenaNet apparently decided to do something about it and basically did like a public shaming of the character inside the game where they stripped him of all his gear and made him jump off of this precipice and before they killed and deleted the character. And I don't know, it's just like seeing medieval justice actually happen in a game is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I saw that article when I was at work, and I didn't know what it would be, so haven't watched it yet. But it's hilarious. It's one of those things, like one of the reasons why I can love gaming outside of the video game world. It's like I can kind of compare it to. There's this guy on the Minnesota Twins who hit a home run in his first swing this week. Like his first at bat, first swing, hits a home run. Jeez. And his family's watching in the audience and they're all recording it on the phones and they go bananas. And then he gets into the dugout and he gets nothing from the team. Like they just give him the silent treatment because he's a rookie. And it's like, that's the reason why I like stuff in baseball. You know, it's like, that's the type of weird shit that I love. And this is kind of, you know, that falls in the same lines as that. And it has nothing to do with actual gaming, but it's just the great things that can come about through the medium, you know? It's
the community quirks that make you love it more. And with all the negativity in gaming, like, there's a lot of justice to this and to see like the developer kind of get behind it and also turn it into an ad for the game, because Guild Wars 2 still managed to show up in the headlines like on a regular basis, so good for them. Another team of developers doing great things. I really love the Devs Play YouTube series that Double Fine's been doing. They've been doing several games. The big one that got on the map for me was they had John Romero on playing Doom. So we started watching that at the office, like for educational reasons and just interest in. Sure. And he's talking about why he's designed a level a certain way. But the new one, which I haven't gotten to watch all the way through yet, but they brought in Koji Igarashi for Symphony of the Night, which is probably one of the most important games to a lot of our writers here on Horrible Night. And that he's out there talking about that, and you know, there's a lot of mystery to those games. There's a lot of mystery to a lot of the our earlier Japanese developed games, just the way that, you know, a lot of the developers had to develop under pseudonyms, and like you don't really even know who necessarily worked on what game. But Symphony of the Night was such a breakout and put it and made a name for himself on that game and the Castlevania going forward that. Yeah, I didn't have time to completely focus on this video, and I want to give it my full attention, but I was just kind of more making people aware that they've gone a little step further if they're bringing in the likes of Iga and for these interviews.
Yeah, I've professed my love for Symphony of the Night, and again, it's one of those games I play once a year, not to completion, just to get that taste of what it is. And thinking back of the franchise, it's like, where did this game come from, you know, in terms of adding the RPG elements, adding like the menu system that just wasn't there in previous Castlevania games. And it was such a revelation for me to add that taste of it. I cannot wait to watch this video.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The standout moment for me at the beginning, I apologize, I forget her name, but the developer at Double Fine, she asked him about Alucard as the protagonist, in that like she'd never really felt any connection with the kind of barbarian style Belmonts that were in the games before this. Sure. But Alucard is like this, just he's an elegant figure. He moves with some grace. He has a different different style for her, and it was like the first character she really connected with and really wanted to play as, and kind of wanted to, like, was this a conscious decision to like get away from the barbarian style? And he totally said that was, you know, that was totally why they went in that direction. And I had never really thought about just how different he felt from the previous protagonist in the Castlevania series. And that was like in the first 5 minutes, so that's where they're going with that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, and
so.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, and maybe that was the connection that I made with it too, from moving from a whip to a sword.
Yeah,
made a huge difference for me.
Yep. All right, I think it's going to do it for this episode of the Horrible Video Game Podcast. We'll be back in a couple weeks with a new episode and a new Horrible Night member to catch up with, and hopefully catch up with Cole again soon, and maybe we'll actually talk about wrestling next time.
No, it'll be Witcher 3.
That's okay. No time for wrestling. Got a Witcher.
No time for wrestling. Yep.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See you.